Hello, this is Neil Ruda. Welcome to Unsung Missionary Heroes, interviews with heroes of the faith. This podcast is brought to you by the 9 international ministries of Assemblies of God World Missions. These ministries are Builders International, Compassion Link, Global Initiative, Global University, Jacob's Hope, Life Publishers, Network 21-1, Oral Learners Initiative, and Royal Rangers International. For more information, visit im-agwm.org. Now let's join our podcast. It's a privilege today to sit down with Dwight and Heather McConnell, longtime missionaries for 40 years now, beginning their tenure in Namibia for 16 years and then serving for another 9 years in South Africa, and then working a number of years now with Compassion Link, one of our AGWM international ministries. So Dwight and Heather, it is a privilege to be here with you today, and thank you for taking the time to do this today.
Thank you, Neil. It's an honor.
I want to start by asking what I ask everyone, and that is, where did it all start? How did you become Christians?
Well, I was born and raised in a Christian home. My father was born in the country of Namibia, my mom in South Africa. From birth, I was exposed to the gospel and really seeing Jesus in my mom and dad. I was a little tiny baby the first time we came to America, and then going back to South Africa, being raised again in a missionary home, mm-hmm. They were serving the African people, and I wanted that. I wanted that as part of my life. So I was around 8 years old when I went to the altar with my dad, and I just said, I want Jesus in my heart too. So that's how it started for me.
And who were your parents?
James and Beryl Stewart.
Yes.
Longtime missionaries, yeah. 56 years in Southern Africa, and Dad served as area director for 17 years, I think it was. But just also being South African, they carried a lot of wisdom, and being, I don't like to use racial terms, but as a white South African couple, they loved the African people mm-hmm. like nothing I'd ever seen before. Yeah. And since they've passed, we've missed them because of the wisdom and the knowledge they shared with us.
Now it's our turn.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And how about you, Dwight?
So I was raised on a cattle ranch in the Sand Hills of north central Nebraska, 20 miles from a little town called Ainsworth. I was blessed. I have an older sister, Vicki Alexander. Vicki and Mark have been missionaries also with the Assemblies of God World Missions for many years. She just retired recently. Vicki and I, our mom was very faithful, very determined that we were going to know the Lord. My dad didn't support that. It was somewhat of a dysfunctional home in that way, spiritually speaking. But mom was tenacious in reading scripture to us, telling us Bible stories, taking us to church, went to a little Assembly of God church in Ainsworth all of my years growing up. You know, there was a time when I obviously observing my dad, I saw that seemed like he didn't need it. He didn't seem like he was missing anything. And I thought maybe church was just for some of the old ladies and the kids and stuff like that. And I didn't take it very seriously. But, you know, it's the thing is, when we get God's word in us, it is living. And you can't get rid of it. And so even as I rebelled against all of that and tried to make my own pathway in high school and subsequent years after that, the thing I could never get away from, no matter how under the influence I was, and that was a lot of times, I couldn't get that. I couldn't get God's word out. I couldn't get scripture out. It was incredibly annoying, but it was powerful. And you couldn't hide from it, ultimately couldn't ignore it. So I did come back to the Lord, and that's a whole long story that would take hours, but I did come back to the Lord, and God saved me from the stuff that I should have been getting punished for. I should have been spending time in jail, and God delivered me from that miraculously, and I made a commitment. I just, I prayed, my sinner's prayer was, in effect, was, God, if you're real, and if you can deliver me from this mess that I've made in my own life, then you can have it, because obviously I'm not doing a very good job with it. So that was kind of my prayer. That was my sinner's mm-hmm. prayer. It wasn't not very theological or very eloquent. And then almost immediately, within just a few days, all of it was cleared up. And even to this day, God's grace still is on my life. There's none of the residual of that stuff. I'm incredibly thankful, and I did stay true to my promise that if God could fix it, which he did, mm-hmm. then I was going to give it to him. So I've given him my life, and, well, the rest is history since that time.
So Heather, you're in Namibia and Dwight, you're in Nebraska. How did you meet?
Well, that's an interesting story because I have to go back a few years. Being in South Africa, I knew that I needed to come to college, to America, to Bible college. But as a little girl, I was about 13 years old, and my mom sat me down one day and said, you know, Heather, you need to start praying for whoever your husband is going to be. And of course, as a 13, 14-year-old, that was kind of a, I laughed at that at first initially, but then I took it seriously and I started praying for whoever my husband was going to be. So fast forward, I came to America, to Vanguard in Southern California. At the time was Southern California College. I started in the fall of 77, and by January of 78, I had a new roommate, and one day we went into the cafeteria, and I looked across the cafeteria, and I saw Dwight sitting there with Mike Beals, who is the president of Vanguard, and that was his roommate. And I said to Debbie, it was something happened in my heart, and I looked at him, and I looked at Debbie, and I said, one day I'm going to marry that man. And she laughed at me like, you know, but I it was something, it was a desire in my heart. I didn't want to have to date people to figure out who the guy was supposed to be. And so after that meal, we were taking our dishes back to the area by the kitchen. And Dwight came up behind me with Mike and he just kind of whispered to me, would you like to go out sometime? And I jabbed Debbie standing behind me and I looked at her and I said, I told you. So that was in January, and by October we were married.
Oh, wow.
So
I wasn't nearly as wise and profound and deeply spiritual. Remember, I had just come from escaping a potentially long jail sentence and several things like that. I told my pastor that God was calling me into ministry. He said, you need to go to Bible college. He said, I didn't need to, but you should. And so he looked up in his book and figured out that where we were at that point in Arizona, we'd sold a ranch in Nebraska, came to Arizona. He said, well, the college you should go to is Southern California College, Vanguard. So I have to admit, this is how unspiritual I was. Heather's being very profound and prophetic in her approach to all of this. Well, I didn't even pray about it. I can tell you today, I did not pray about going to school. My pastor told me you should go to this college, and so I signed up, and they accepted me for whatever reason. That was it. So I was there, and all I knew was there was this cute girl with this strange accent. You know, in Nebraska, we didn't hear accents like that. That was all very foreign to me, and I was quite fascinated. So there it was. That was nothing very complex or profound in that for me. I just thought this was a really cool girl. And I've got a picture over there on my desk that was taken just a couple of months after that. So, I mean, that's the girl I married. And she still looks the same today, too. And I'm still fascinated.
What made you choose California?
Northern California was my mom and dad's district.
Okay.
And dad, when they came to America the very first time, 1959, they came through Springfield and were invited to the School of Missions, the very first School of Missions. And they weren't, they weren't missionaries. They were just these nationals coming to America.
Yeah.
And he went to Bethany in California. Yeah. So originally, I actually came in 76 to go to Bethany, was here for 3 months and said, I don't want to be in America. I'm going back home. Hmm. And I called my mom and dad. They said, buy a ticket and just come home.
Yeah.
I was there for another year, and then I finally came back. And I mean, think of it. If I had gone to Bethany, isn't that amazing?
So I'm going to ask the question I ask everyone, how you were called to missions, or pretty sure how yours was. How about you, Dwight?
You know what it was for me? We stayed out. We got married the end of October of what should have been our sophomore year. But we stayed out. We chose to stay out that year and just kind of, you know, get our feet on the ground as a newly married couple. Remember, I was a little bit older at that point. I was the age of most of the college graduates, mm-hmm. I suppose. So we had the opportunity. Heather's folks invited us to come out and serve kind of like summer MAPS assignments. Okay. It wasn't exactly an internship, but something like that. Mm-hmm. So we went out the summer between our sophomore and junior year, after we'd been married for almost 2 years at that point. And we were working in Botswana and then had the opportunity to travel around South Africa with Heather's dad and mom And so we were in Zimbabwe, Botswana, South Africa, Swaziland, Lesotho. We were all over, everywhere in Southern Africa, all of the countries in Southern Africa region that he was the area director over. We were able to go to all of those except Namibia. That was the only place that we didn't go to. We were in all the other. What sat with me so strongly, it wasn't a real big, deep spiritual thing, but I think what just so impacted me was I was observing pastors, especially in Botswana and Zimbabwe, that were riding some old clunker bicycles that would have made a better boat anchor. And they these guys were going around. There were a pastor would usually be pastoring 3 or 4, maybe even 5 churches. Sometimes every day of the week, they would be having services in different communities, and he's riding his bicycle to it. And I remember looking at one of our minister's books from the national office and thinking that the numbers were almost the opposite. It seemed like we had about 3 pastors per church here in the U.S. at that time, you know, as far as credentialed. Out there, it seemed like we had about 3 churches per pastor. I saw all of that, and it struck me, and again, it was just one of these things, like, God, if you could use us in this environment, we're available. And that was kind of our discussions and all of that. Our heart was just compelled. My heart was compelled to serve these pastors and these young men. Had an opportunity of being in the Bible school in Botswana. Really enjoyed that, getting to know some of the young people that were there, these younger, and they're not like college kids here in the U.S. always. These guys were probably in their 30s, and you know, most of them, but they had come to further their education. And so I saw the sacrifices, saw the work that they were putting into it, and their vision and their calling. And I just said, God, however we can help enhance that, we want to be available for it. And then God began to open doors after that, you know. It was a life-changing summer for me. Heather's dad was an avid runner as well at the time. And so on the way from the airport after picking us up after the long flight to South Africa from Southern California, he says to me, "Did you bring your running shoes?" I don't even own any running shoes. You know, I don't run. He goes, "Well, you do now." And so he stopped and bought me my first pair of running shoes. And then the next morning, we had to go out for a 6-mile run. That became an integral part of my life.
He broke you in well.
Yeah, exactly right. I knew who was the boss, and I knew what we had to do. So, but I mentioned that just because it became a part of our lives, opened a lot of doors, and linked to a lot of other things later on. So I'll leave that for now.
You mentioned that there were 1 pastor to 3 or more churches. Is that still the case?
I think that's probably still pretty consistent. Okay. Yeah.
That's a real sacrifice.
Yeah, it is. And, of course, a lot of these were like little home groups and things like that. They're not necessarily big, well-organized churches like we think of. But it was really incredibly compelling to see the sacrifices and the work. And these pastors that we met, I just remember a few of them. Man, they weren't in it for themselves in any way. It was all for the communities, for the people that they were meeting with. You could just see, we witnessed firsthand the love, the care, the compassion. It was a life-changing, it made an impression on me that I had, you know, and again, coming from such a incredibly sheltered, isolated background like I did growing up, I'd never seen anything like that. It was so far distant from church ministries that my limited experience at that point had, you know, so.
So when you came back home, you finished schooling?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then returned to?
Finished schooling, so we had another 2 years, and we were involved in a church plant. We were involved in different ministries at the time, both on campus and involved in a church plant in Southern California. I got credentialed, and then, of course, the requirements for missions were that we were going to have to pastor a church for 2 years. The Lord led us to Northern California. Again, Heather's folks were on a furlough at that point, a generation cycle, and so we came up to Northern California right after graduation. And God opened the door. It didn't seem right in terms of, on paper, it didn't look right, but we knew it was. God opened the door for us in a little AG church in Chowchilla, California, Central Valley, just north of Fresno, as a school principal and youth pastor. So again, on paper, that didn't look right according to the requirements that we had, because we were going to go into missions as fully appointed missionaries from the beginning at 26 or 27 years old. But God has used that and planted us in that community in a way that it became an incredibly important part of our support base, both spiritually, numerically, financially, in every way. Mm-hmm. It became such an important part of our lives still to this day here, 40 years later. Mm-hmm. God is still using those people and those churches in that region to help us continue doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your years in missions in Africa.
So for me, I was going home, mm-hmm. if I can just be that honest and say. So living in Namibia, where as Dad was area director, that was the country really that was had never had a missionary. He asked us if we were open to that. And of course, you know, we just said, we just believed that the Lord would lead us. So mm-hmm. we went there. And if I can honestly say, looking back on it, we lived every day as if we were touching people's lives, not as if, but really praying that we would touch people's mm-hmm. lives, whether that was in the grocery store. And I speak Afrikaans, mm-hmm. which really was the trade language in Namibia, even though Namibia later, well, we were there when they went through independence, which was a kind of a scary time in a way, because there was lots of military patrols and stuff like that, and we had to have a 4x4 packed and ready to go to leave the country if need be, if skirmishes were around. And so anyway, when we went there, we really believed that by just living out our Christian walk, it was going to be part of how God was going to open doors for us, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when we first got there, our oldest, Jesse, was 4, and we had Curtis was a year old. But during that first term, it was really about getting our footing. And I was familiar with the culture. I was home. I would go to the grocery store. But for Dwight, it was an adjustment. Mm-hmm. So he did take some language study and studied some Afrikaans. But so I would really say about that very beginnings, that was our focus, was just living our lives for the Lord and really encountering people every day, wherever it was. Mm-hmm. And the Lord began to open doors. And honestly, looking back on it now, it's incredible to think of the doors that opened, because it didn't seem like that would, at the time, that things were really going to progress as quickly as what they ended up progressing. And so I don't know if that makes sense. Maybe you can add a little bit more.
In addition to that, our kids were, you know, Jesse was just coming into like preschool, kindergarten age and stuff like that. We went to, we had the kids in an English-speaking public school, which was available there. A lot of places don't have such thing, you know, mm-hmm. like that. But we were blessed with that. And so we started getting involved, you know, just because it was a place where first Jesse was going to be going to school and then Curtis would be following that. We got involved, just try to be helpful, be a blessing, be an encouragement to the people in the school. And that led into amazing open doors with this big public school. This is the biggest mm-hmm. English-speaking public school in the entire country of Namibia. Eventually became the official pastors of that mm-hmm. school, public school. Imagine that happening now. But it was really remarkable. God gave us opportunities to minister to different teachers and staff that were going through struggles in their lives, ministering to students. And as a result, I don't even have any idea, but hundreds of kids, the age, our kids' classmates and ones like that, through different events that we were involved in, many of those kids came to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And then coming back to the running thing, even through things like being a part of a local running club, put me in contact with people that I would have never met any other way. We started a Bible school, and so there was always activities. It's like let's enroll the students in, in doing a half marathon. They didn't want it. I took the same approach my father-in-law did for me. It's like, yeah, it's not really an option. This is what we do, you know. And they all loved it, and we had a lot of great athletes, and we'd play volleyball. And so sports was actually a big part of our lives, you know, running, volleyball. I mean, just soccer, any kind of, just to throw a ball or something into the middle of about anything and stuff can happen, you know. I wouldn't call it necessarily a mission strategy, but for us, we like Heather said, we were trying to live out our lives and be a testimony in everything that we did and thrive in the things that we did. Step into wherever God opened doors for us, and we just simply wanted to go into those, and the Lord gave us some amazing relationships that are still vibrant today after all these years.
So, what are some of the highlights?
I would say looking at our kids, the doors that opened with the kids. We did have a ministry center, and it was an incredible experience how the Lord opened. That's also a long story to go into now, but a ministry center where it was open basically for the kids to come in at any time. And even later on, not long before we left, we were able to open a school, a Christian school.
Oh.
And today it's still running all the way through high school. There's no outside funding, no overseas funding. It was like that way from the very beginning. But I'd say for me, the highlights were the kids at the school. And so many years later now, so many of those kids are in government, are in businesses. The one young man, he's older man now, but he's the head of the national bank.
He leads the entire banking industry for the country of Namibia.
And just loves the Lord.
People in government and high government places as well.
So people expect to say, you know, the ministry of Bible school, so many Bible school students, which we did have. It was amazing. For me, it was the kids that would come to the house. And once the country went through independence, we all became, all the schools, everything became integrated. Because it had been a South African territory up until 1989. And we were there. I was able to vote because my father had been born in Namibia. So up until then, everything was segregated. But after 1989, everything was integrated and we would have so many different colors of students in our home. The boys would bring all their friends and we just saw so many lives changed, not because we went out and had a sidewalk Sunday school or something. Yeah. But we just lived out and we loved on them and we cared for them. We listened to them sometimes. I remember one particular little boy. He was in what we would say grade six, so sixth grade. And the principal had called us in and this little boy his father had beat him with a brick. And he sat in that office that day and just wanted Jesus in his heart because he knew he wanted to be a part of something more than just a family that had abused him so badly. And then even when we moved to Durban in South Africa, it was the same thing. The doors that the Lord opened for us were. That was more with high school students. Elementary and high school, actually both. And we heard those stories over and over again, and they just wanted more for their lives, and they wanted Jesus to live in their hearts. So.
And they saw him in you.
We had an interesting thing happened at the ministry center that Heather mentioned in Windhoek in the capital city of Namibia. It was located geographically. There was a local map of the city, and if you put an X across from corner to corner, we were dead center in the middle of it. I mean, that X line it on our property there. There were five high schools within less than 2 mile radius, different directions from that ministry center. So 5 miles in just about any direction, there were these high schools, and they had these big dormitories because a lot of places, a lot of the smaller towns in Namibia, Namibia is twice the size of California, only has at that point less than 2 million people. Most of these smaller towns and communities around the country didn't have high schools. A lot of them had elementary schools, but they would send their kids to high school, like boarding school.
Yeah.
So there were these dormitory hostels for high school kids of, several hundred kids in these hostels. And we had a few sort of college and career age young people that were a part of our ministry there. And they were getting together on Friday nights and having popcorn and watching videos, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I happened to be there one Friday evening and I saw this and I thought, man, what a waste. These guys have got to do better than that. You know, we have a lot of good potential in this dozen or so young people here. And so we just rallied them together and said, I think it's time that we start doing a outreach and you guys lead it, go out in pairs. And I want you girls go to the girls' dormitories. And we just started picking schools, got permission, and they started holding Bible studies in those schools. Eventually, what happened, make a long story short, the kids started coming to a Friday night youth service. Most of their sports activities would be on Saturdays, so they'd come over Friday evenings. Even got to the point where the schools were busing them to us. Our sanctuary that would normally seat about 200 people on a good Sunday, we would have it packed out with 300-400 high school kids. Our college-age students were basically discipling those kids and meeting with them every night of the week. They were holding Bible studies and like support group type things on the campuses, and the schools loved it because the kids were not being in trouble. They could see improvements. There was measurable improvements in grades and activities and all just around. Peace and quiet, just everything about it was an improvement and a blessing to the school. So we had tremendous support there. And that went on for, I don't know how long that was, so that long after we left even, that was still continuing on. It was really amazing to be a part of that and see the lives being changed that way. Our oldest son, Jesse, started playing the piano, just kind of picking at it and playing by ear, and Heather helped him and taught him how to, play, and he started leading worship there and eventually became a worship leader in our church and, things like that. But that's where he started, was in this Friday night youth group, and I don't think those kids really cared too much what it sounded like, It was pretty rough to start with, but it was good.
Were there low points?
Yeah, there were some low points. I'll take the lead on that one. Just initially, that when we started a church, God had given us a vision. Let me back up. God had given us a vision very clearly, uniquely. Heather had the vision of what God was going to do. This started within the first year that we arrived in Namibia. I had it, and together, as we began to talk about it, it was very clear. God was speaking this to us. He wanted us to understand this and to have it embedded in our hearts because it was going to be about what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a sort of marching orders of see how clever you can be to put all this together. It was like, this is what's coming. Be ready, and this is what you can expect. And if I use the illustration a lot of times in describing it, just like, if you get a new puzzle, 500-piece puzzle, and that's what we got. We each got sort of handed the box, and we were able to look at the box cover, and see what the puzzle's going to look like. And then we observed almost immediately of God bringing in the pieces. Mm-hmm. The box was empty to start with the exception of just the two or three pieces that we brought. Yeah. And God began to fill that box with these different puzzle pieces. By the time we had left there 16 years later, puzzle pieces were all there. Mm-hmm. Everything was there. The entire picture had been fulfilled. But the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, according to John 10:10. Mm-hmm. And man, we experienced that because there was an enemy that was incredibly real there. This is a country that had been held in bondage, addictions of conflict, of racial conflict, of just all kinds of strife. One of the most well-known things about churches in Namibia was that they always split, and then the split, and it just keeps going like that. And so there were no big thriving churches in the entire country. It just didn't happen. It was a nation of conflict. Soon after we started, right in the heart of the capital city, which was neutral. This was before independence. It was while the old apartheid system was still in place. So if we go to any suburb, if it's a white suburb or a black suburb, whatever it is, that was going to be the church. And God clearly said, one of the clear pictures of the puzzle was, it's going to be a multiracial work. Mm-hmm. And we were starting that long before independence, several years. So we started right downtown in an area that was neutral, that was not defined by racial makeup like the neighborhoods and communities were. A guy came into that, and I won't elaborate on this whole story, but a guy came in, and within two or three times of meeting him and his family, very successful businessman, very wealthy guy, he handed me a book and made the statement to me. He says, I have destroyed other churches, and you're next. He showed me, he had documented all of the stuff of different churches that he had actually not only destroyed, but had somehow managed to acquire even their properties, put the challenge down that we were next. And it was relentless. But God, stayed true to us because he had put a vision in our hearts. God, it was his. It was God's vision. And it was God's promise that it was what he was going to do. And it wasn't going to, he was going to use us, but it wasn't going to be about our genius. It was going to be about what God does. The last time we saw that guy, he had lost his family, his business. He was living like a homeless, crazy person out on the streets and the park bench and stuff like that. And he just had lost his mind. That was years and years later, and we don't rejoice in that, but the church is still there. The Bible school is still there. All of the ministry, the Christian school, all of those things that were established in those days are still there. They are still happening, and the work of the enemy has been crushed, has been defeated. So it was, and there was a lot of lows that went with that. There was some very, very difficult times with that. If I could jump to, you know, you were going to say about we ever wanted to give up. There was a point I got in my Jeep and I went out on the mountaintop outside of town and I looked over all of it. And I was just so discouraged. I just prayed, God, this is not the way this is supposed to be. We were pretty young missionaries still at that point. Had never really encountered those kinds of opposition. That this can't be what it's about. I didn't sign up for this. The Lord said nothing.
So what kept you going?
Didn't say a thing. But I was reminded that we had made a commitment and that we had believed the Lord. God had proven himself to us through itineration. Through raising the budgets, God had done so many miracles. He had given us a vision in our hearts that we believed was true. When the Lord stays silent, you know, you cry out to him in times and he stays silent, then what else you do except stop and think, okay, God, you're not saying anything. Is it because you've already said it? Because the message has already been given to us. And I think that's what it was. But yeah, there was definitely, hey, I'm ready to pack up and go home. I don't need this, you know. I didn't sign up for this. I don't want it. Get somebody else. Yeah, I mean, that was Moses, wasn't it?
Sure.
Hey, pick somebody else. Yeah. There's a lot of people better than me for this. And we definitely went through those times. And there's a lot of others. I mean, we can tell you. That's too much to talk about in something like this. There were personal, there were health issues. There were, you know, a couple of miscarriages that Heather went through that, I mean, just a lot of stuff that was pretty, it was traumatic. Home invasion, you know, just different stuff that were traumatic things that I don't know that we were necessarily well prepared for. But there were some hard times.
Yeah. What has been the most rewarding accomplishment you would look back upon?
I think one of the most rewarding things was seeing, well, there were things within our family, but let me just cover stuff like the like seeing those kids coming in from the high schools was amazing. Seeing them get dropped off by buses out in front of the building, wondering what in the world are we going to do with them, and yet God was changing lives. It was him. It was him doing it. And then we saw something similar in the city of Durban as well as in South Africa through a ministry that we had started there that we actually got it registered like a nonprofit organization would be here. It was a South African version of that called United Christian Youth. And it was really, we just rallied youth pastors together. There were some from our Assembly of God churches, but we just had youth pastors from every church. We just welcomed them all. We Catholics, the Dutch Reformed, I mean, it didn't make any difference. Just everybody got together. And this is a city of, I mean, the city of Durban is twice the population of the entire country of Namibia. And so there were a couple of hundred high schools throughout the whole city. And so we had youth pastors that were gathering together. And what God did was he united us together. Again, it was a vision that the Lord had given us was that he wanted to unite together these youth pastors to reach these high school kids in particular. And they don't have middle school there. So it was kind of late elementary, upper elementary, you know, grade 7 before they went into high school. And to reach these kids and then pass to them, and we took the attitude, and it was genuinely was adhered to across the whole group of 50-plus youth pastors, was God has called us to pastor the youth of this part of the city. One teen leaves my youth group to go to yours. That's all right. Lateral movement, what we call just lateral movement, was fine. But if one of them ever dropped out, then it becomes the responsibility of all of us to pounce on them and make sure they get back. And so to shepherd, you know, to shepherd and pastor those kids. And that's what we did. And it was pretty amazing because we had some really cool youth camps that came out of that. We had some great music groups came in. I mean, Matt Redman came. He came, you know, we thought, hey, we'll just send a text or an email to Matt Redman and see if he'll come, you know, from the UK. And he did. I mean, just stuff like that, you know, happened that it's like, who would have thought? So those were really cool. And there were some young people that had come to the Lord specifically through our ministry because they were friends of our kids. Mm-hmm. They came in and we started a Christian discipleship program, kind of a
master's commission.
Like a master's commission type
kind
of thing,
like
you know, out of high school, sort of a gap year out of high school before we would challenge kids all the time, take a year before you make your university decisions and just serve God, you know, and you know, kind of like give a year and pray about a lifetime.
I like that.
Yeah. It was the same thing. We were doing it. We didn't have all that terminology. We didn't know all that stuff in those days, but we did. And we still, those kids today are married, have families of their own. They're in businesses. They're in ministry. They're, you know, they're thriving still today. We stay in touch with them.
I was going to say the one girl, Natalie, who came from a dysfunctional home. I mean, her mom was an alcoholic, her father was. She messaged me the other day and just reflecting back, just thanked the Lord that she discovered what the Lord's giftings in her life were, and that she had accepted the Lord through our ministry, and that she was serving Him, and she had an amazing godly husband and two little kids, and she just kept saying, going on and on about how thankful she was for the short amount of time that we were in her life. And then I think about Dean.
Yeah, the one kid, his mom had died of an aneurysm
he was 13.
Early, yeah, he was sort of middle school age, you know, and his mom had died of an aneurysm at the gym, and she was in her 30s. He was just devastated, a very, very wealthy family. His dad owned multiple businesses involved in regional government and stuff like that there. And Dean just kind of went off the deep end. And his dad was lost as well with all of that. Mm-hmm. And Dean would take the car keys to the keys to the BMW, and he would go to the casinos and he would drink and gamble at 13, 14, 15 years old. And they would let him because he had money. And so his life was in a downhill slide. One of Curtis's friends, or Curtis, invited him to come to a evening youth meeting at our home. And Dean did, accepted Christ as a Savior. It began just a series of changes in his life that then his dad took notice of, and a lot of people around him began to notice. Jump way forward, Dean is a member of Parliament today in South Africa.
He also stays in touch just for the longest time, even when we were living there. You know, he'd say that the Lord sent him another mother. And I would just spend time having coffee with him, just letting him talk. And we'd shed many, many, many tears together. But for me, those are some of the most precious times as a missionary. And, you know, the struggles are real. The struggles are really real. But if we reflect back on, I will say the most devastating thing happened when the Lord took Tyler, our youngest. That was while we've been here at Compassion Inc. And it's not what you expect, but our team rallied around us here. We're thankful for that. And, you know, I look back on his life and see how the Lord used him as a little boy there in Durban, and how the Lord just, his light shone for him, you know. So I don't think you can get any more devastating than that, than losing your child. But, you know, we know that he's with the Lord today. So
there were a lot of rewarding things, a lot of difficult things. You know, for new missionaries, this just happens to be orientation week for new ones coming in. And so maybe it's not a coincidence that this is happening now. But I think for those people that are just getting started, one of the things that I don't know that we realized at the time, it goes all the way back to the days in Namibia, and we would do what they called sports tours. They would, because it's Namibia was very isolated. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the way where I grew up at, you know, in northern Nebraska, very isolated. And so we would we'd get together about 45 kids, girls hockey team, field hockey, and boys rugby team. And those kids, we would put them in a big bus, and we'd drive them down to Cape Town or someplace in South Africa, and they would compete against other schools for a week, every day, having matches and competitions. And then at night, we'd stay in a Boy Scout hall type of thing, just a big hall, and cook and eat together. And then we would just have church. Mm-hmm. You know, we decide, hey, we're going to do something good with these kids while they're here. And so, again, this is all public school. Yeah. And so these kids all, by the end of the week that we had been down there, all of them had asked the Lord into their hearts. They're all singing worship songs.
And crying and hugging each other and just...
One of the things that we realized, I think only later on, because we got feedback from it eventually, was that we were literally the first family that those kids had ever seen that hadn't gone through, you know, abuse and divorce and everything else. I think one of the most important things that we realized in that was probably one of the most important things you can do as a mission strategy is to live your life, your marriage, and your family for God's glory. We do that here or in faraway places. It has to be genuine. Yes. People will see through it. Mm-hmm. If we come trying to be a fake or put on something or depend on programs or our name or anything else, you know, hey, we're the Assemblies of God. That makes, you know, that is not what's going to do it. It's not what's going to bring people to Christ. It is going to be through relationships and through being genuine. People saw our vulnerabilities and our struggles and everything else, and yet we still stayed together. Mm-hmm. We actually still like each other, you know. I mean, we've been married 45 years, and it's just getting better. But that was all a part of a commitment that we made in our foundations of our marriage early on, was live a life for the Lord and make sure that it's every part of everything you do. And I think we tried to do that. Again, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think that was the thing that we were most strongly committed to that superseded our location, whether we were in Namibia or South Africa or dozens of places that we've been in since we've been here at Compassion Link. That's the one thing that I think supersedes all of that, is that our lives every single day should be a reflection of Christ. Yeah. And that we should, you know, the greatest commandment, our Great Commission is incredibly important, but the greatest commandment is love God and love your neighbor. I think within our family, loving each other and sharing that both brings glory to God, and I don't know, that's how we love our neighbors.
You're real.
Yeah, just try to be real. We don't do very well putting on pretenses or some kind of imagery that we're not. We've learned a lot. We have found that God can use all of the stuff, all of your hurts and your struggles and your difficulty. We shouldn't waste those. Heaven forbid we waste our failures and our struggles, you know, and there have been plenty of them. Been a lot of really amazing victories. It's been quite a journey.
Thank you for being honest and for being transparent. People, I believe, are going to listen to this and will be blessed, and hopefully will be maybe challenged even to make changes in their own lives.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for doing this today and for taking the time to do it. I appreciate it from my heart.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invitation, Neil. It's a pleasure. And I do hope that whoever listens will be encouraged and maybe find something to relate to and connect with.
Well, that's our podcast for today on Unsung Missionary Heroes, Interviews with Heroes of the Faith. My name is Neil Ruda. This podcast has been brought to you by the 9 International Ministries of Assemblies of God World Missions. They are Builders International, Compassion Link, Global Initiative, Global University, Jacob's Hope, Life Publishers, Network 21-1, Oral Learners Initiative, and Royal Rangers International. You can check all of them out at im-agwm.org. Thanks again for joining us, and come back again and listen to our next podcast.